Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Monday, August 31st, 2015. And with me today, I have Dave Hamilton. How are you, Dave?
I'm great, man. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on the show. I wanted to have you on. I've actually been really looking forward to this, not because I just get to hang out with you on the show, but because you have this really awesome perspective that I had not seen yet from anyone else. And what I'm talking about is the whole thing with Apple changing the way that that Safari is going to handle some ads that show up. And I've seen a lot of publications freaking out in a big way, and they're really concerned that this is going to be a huge problem for them for revenue generating. And I was wondering if that could be an issue for us. And then on Friday, you come out with your perspective, which is, no, this is actually a really good thing.
Well, yeah, here's a little bit of background. iOS 9, when Apple announced it at WWDC, they announced something that developers could tap into called iOS 9 content blockers. You can build an extension for Safari so it's really Safari content blockers in iOS 9, but also in OS 10. I mean, this is a possible thing. We've had plugins in OS 10. And what these content blockers get to do is filter the what's called the DOM, the document object model, in a web page to keep the browser, theoretically, and this is, again, Apple, at least to my knowledge, isn't going to release any of their own content blockers. They're just opening the door for developers to develop and then presumably either offer for free or sell these things in the App Store. What they can do is tell Safari, don't load these types of resources. And the reason is, a mobile browser, A, is often on a data-limited connection, either speed or just the amount of data or both. But also a mobile browser typically is on a, you know, I'm using air quotes here, underpowered device. When I compare that to my, you know, one of my first Macs, the iPhone is like, you know, what, 1,000 times more power, 2,000 times more powerful than certainly my first Apple IIc, right? But It's built to be a battery-efficient device, a power-efficient device, and as such, actually does some things that keep it slow for the benefit of power. And that makes web pages load slow if they're loading all this extra content. So the idea was, put these content blockers out there. It will allow developers and then, by proxy, users to only see web pages the way they want to see them. And sure enough, you know, some crafty developers, you know, downloaded the beta and created some content blockers right off the bat that made web pages load way faster. I mean, they did some examples with The Verge and iMore where, I mean, it was, you know, loaded in a tenth of the time.
Right? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is a good thing. And it's you know, it's nice when web pages come up quickly. What this means, though, is the user gets to decide what part of the web page they're going to view or they're going to download and process. And that means it's out of the hands of the web publisher. But what it really means is one of the primary things you're going to block is ads, because the user typically doesn't want to see the ads. I don't think users hate ads. I think users hate when ads negatively impact their experience of reading the web.
I'll agree with you. That's certainly the case for me. I'm fine with ads. It's just obtrusive ads that make it difficult or impossible for me to read the content that I've gone to a site to see.
Right. And now here's the thing. The way, you know, the web ad industry now runs on a lot of JavaScript. And what happens is it's usually a series of cascading JavaScript. So you'll have one on the site that might load a direct sold ad, and it checks to see if there's a direct sold ad to show. If there's not, then it triggers the first remnant provider. And if that one doesn't have one, it cascades through. And you might have five or six different requests by the browser, right? JavaScript runs client-side in this scenario. And so it puts all the load of finding the right ad to display on the client. It's not like the server says, all right, let's go through and check these five places, find the right ad, and let's show it to the user, right? It's, nope, we're going to have the user check to see if ad from provider number one is going to work. Nope. All right, have the user check to see if ad from provider number two, and so on and so forth until provider number five finally responds to the user with the ad. That's a lot to ask of a browser. It's totally understandable how, when you take baby steps down this path, how we got here, but it's not a good place to be. So I get it when users say they want to block ads. It's also worth stating that web pages don't come for free, right? The price to view a web page is whatever the publisher decides it is. The publisher is putting the content out there. You get to decide the price. You, as the reader, gets to decide if they want to pay the price to view the content. Now, that could be behind a paywall. Very simple, classic example. Here at TMO, that's not what we do. The price to view TMO is that you agree to view, not click on, not interact with, not buy from. You agree to view the ads that we choose to show you. Not viewing those ads is stealing, right? If you're going to view the content but not the ads, you're stealing. I say that, and it's a charged way of saying it, but it's true, so it's worth saying. But saying it doesn't solve the problem, right? If people want to block the ads, there's an underlying problem here, and I get it because I'm one of you, right? I don't like my experience to slow down, but it's going, you know, so I agree with these content blockers. Despite the fact that they facilitate what I've now defined as stealing, I'm glad they're here. Because here's the thing. Ads on the web weren't always this way, right? It may be hard to believe it, but Google, there were ads on the web before Google existed. And there were certainly ads on the web before Google started having things like AdSense, where they sold ads and served ads all over the web. And it's Google's fault that we're here. Now, it might have been somebody else's fault if Google didn't step in and do this. But they're the ones that really kind of devalued and automated this whole thing on the web. And ads used to cost 10 times what they do today. Yes, the value of the dollar has changed, but the value of ads has changed differently. You know, well, so yeah. So, you know, I see this. I really do see this as a good thing. What it means with these content blockers is that sites can no longer get away with just grabbing a piece of Google code, plugging it into their website, and forgetting about their responsibility to their readers when it comes to these advertisements that pay their bills. What you need to do as a publisher is go back to doing the hard work. You need to go out and find the right sponsors. You need to serve the ads yourself. That's something we all used to do. And frankly, if we went back to serving ads ourselves without using JavaScript, content blockers would not block those ads. They would also load a lot faster because it'd be no different than you loading an image from our site, right? Or text from our site. It would be the same to your browser. And it would be really fast and really efficient, so you probably wouldn't hate it. So that's what I feel like content blockers are heading us down a path of saying, hey, you got to be responsible to your users. The same way that you go and optimize the delivery of your content, you need to go and optimize the delivery of your ads. And that means the sourcing of your ads necessarily has to change. And that's going to happen. And we get to go back there. But that's kind of good news for me, because not only did we do that before, but, you know, I have this other company called Backbeat Media that has been selling ads on the web for, what, 16 years now, mm-hmm. and been selling ads on podcasts, which are very similar to the old ways of selling ads on the web, because there's no automation and no, remnant providers or anything like that. We've been doing that for 10 years. So this is actually a good thing for me, and it will allow us to continue to do what we do and perhaps even do it for more people. Because you can't just plug in the automated, hey, you know, set it and forget it, Google code. You need someone, either someone that you hire internally or someone you contract with like us, to go out and sell your ads and sell the right ads and display them in the right way and be responsible about it. So I think it's a good thing. It requires a lot of hard work, and that's good.
All right. So for Mac Observer, and I'm using Mac Observer as an example because, of course, I'm intimately familiar with our site.
Absolutely.
Changing the way ads are handled has the potential to improve overall site performance.
Definitely.
and potentially give viewers ads that are more targeted for our audience, because they're not cascading or falling back to ads that may not be.
Right.
And then it cuts out the ad blockers from the mix, which means that the overall value of the ads goes up.
You got it.
Which in turn means that there's more money coming into the site, so that we have more money to keep our servers running. We have more money to pay all of our writers.
Yeah, I'm actually not convinced that this will make advertising more lucrative for any given website. We're a little different here at TMO because we've always kind of kept at least some level of our own ad sales engine in place, right? Because of what I do with Backbeat Media, we've always done direct sales with ads. But we have also leveraged a lot of these automated systems. We've actually cut back quite a bit on that, especially over the last year, because their value has gone down quite a bit. And we've always known that they're annoying to users. So a lot of those like in-text ads that you would see on TMO, we got rid of those very late last year. Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of thing. We're always thinking about this stuff and valuing, okay, comparing, well, what's it worth to us financially and what's it cost us in terms of annoying and potentially driving away our readers or potential readers, right? So we're constantly doing that. It will mean that we lose sources of revenue. Will it mean that the other sources increase? Advertising sources? Yeah, probably a little bit. But I also, you know, in today's world, as a web publisher, you can't just rely on advertising for your revenue. I mean, you know, you can expand it. You can do things like sponsorships. I still lump that into advertising, although it's mm-hmm. different. You know, you're displaying a banner. That's advertising to me. A sponsorship is, and maybe these are just, you know, the same names or different names for the same thing. That's fine. But, you know, a sponsorship is more when someone has a deeper integration with the site. Instead of just buying a banner, maybe you're buying a sponsored post where we thank you and post to Twitter, and it's a more kind of comprehensive package. It's all advertising in the end. There are other things, right? We leverage a lot of affiliate style things where we find good deals and promote them. And if you take advantage of that deal, we get a little kickback on that, right? There's several avenues via which yeah. Our income flows in, and that's okay. There's a lot of publishers that have sort of just taken the easy way out because they didn't know a world with anything else, right? They didn't exist before that, and for them, and that was sort of the catalyst to my article. As I started hearing from a lot of, you know, publishers that are maybe only 5 or 6 years old, which is still old in web terms, but newer than Google, and right. have always just relied on this big cash flow coming. If you have enough traffic, Google Ads will just pay your bills. And then some. You can make quite a bit of money. But, you know, when people start blocking stuff, that's the first thing to go. So
now, for a company like Backbeat Media, which is yep. your other company, so Mac Observer and Backbeat Media are not the same company.
No, that's correct. Very much joined at the hip, but separate businesses, correct.
Right. So For a company like Backbeat Media and other companies that are out there helping publishers get advertising, is this going to have a big impact there?
I think it's a great thing for any publisher services company that truly is a publisher services company that, you know, partners with their publishers and works with them to do the right things for them and all of that. Yes, absolutely. I think it's absolutely a good thing. Because you're going to need someone to manage this. Again, it's, you know, either someone you hire internally or someone you partner with. And there's nothing wrong with either. It just depends on what's right for your business.
All right. So what I'm picking up from you is that people like me, whose paychecks are derived primarily from advertising revenue, and so listeners, when you're going to the site and reading articles, thank you for not blocking ads because, hey, you're helping pay my salary. I appreciate that. People like me, our paychecks aren't going to go away as long as we're handling ads appropriately so that we're minimizing the likelihood that they're going to be shut down because we're doing advertising correctly.
That's right. And that is a moving target and always has been, you know. And so this is just yet another move that needs to happen. But doing advertising correctly, whatever that means in the moment, is, and it can mean multiple things simultaneously, of course. But yeah, that's the trick, is you just, you know, you need to be aware. You need to move with the industry and move with your readers. Follow, you know, treat yourself like a reader to your site and you're good to go. I think.
Awesome. Okay. I'm not worried like I was before about what was going to happen with advertising, because when a company as big as Apple starts making changes with the way content will be delivered,
yeah,
I mean that's a big thing. After talking with you and reading your article and talking more, I'm okay with this, and I'm thinking in the grand scheme of things, this is going to be better all the way around.
Yeah. No, it is. You know, ad blockers have existed for a long time on the desktop, not so much on mobile. But my advice to people that wanted to use ad blockers was twofold. Number one, I get it, right? I don't like it in some ways, but I get it. But if, you know, whitelist, either blacklist the sites you don't like or whitelist the sites that you do. But go one step further and make sure when you blacklist a site that you block yourself from seeing any content from that site. Because that way you won't, you know, if there's a site you hate, you know, siteihate.com, right? You're not going to intentionally go there, but somebody might try to link you there, right? And perhaps not even, maliciously, right? They think, oh, you should read this, you know, and you click on the link. Well, instead of just blocking their ads, block everything from them. And then that way you're not stealing anything. You're just not seeing anything from them, and that's better.
All right. Hey, you mentioned earlier about affiliate stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm totally going to take advantage of that. And
please
tell our listeners, we have affiliate links, and you can use those to help us generate money to make sure that we are paying our writers and that our servers stay online and that our podcasts are on the air. And one of the links you can go to is macobserver.com/Apple Store. And from there, you'll actually see all of our different links that we have for affiliates. And use those when you need to buy something from the Apple Store or from Amazon. And there's a couple others that I'm totally drawing a blank on right now, Dave.
Mac Mall is one of the big ones. We should do a whole episode about why Mac Mall is the first place you should go when you want to buy a Mac, because they have better prices than Apple with the same warranty. So macobserver.com/MacMall will get you, again, to all of the links Jeff just mentioned, and it'll highlight the one for Mac Mall.
And okay, so since I mentioned Apple Store, you mentioned Mac Mall, even though they go to the same place, I'll make sure there's links to both in the show notes today.
Sweet.
And listeners, go there when you need to buy something and help us get a little bit of money in the process, because money's what makes all of this happen.
It is.
Dave, we're out of time.
Thanks for having me, Jeff. Thanks for letting me ramble on.
Oh, sure. Thank you for being here and bringing your perspective. You are in a unique position because you have a Mac and Apple blog news site, Mac Observer, and you also have an ad serving site.
Yep.
Or business, there we go, through Backbeat Media. So you get to see this from both sides. So it's really great to have your perspective on this. So, hey, thank you for being here today.
My pleasure.
And listeners, thank you for joining us today. It's always great to get back with all of you after the weekend. So I'm glad you're back. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.